Ja.
Doet u dat wel in dit geval?
Ja, altijd.
Daar zijn we wrong.
Everything.
Well, 65
the truth of the matter is, you know, if you have a pop, it's very important. If you have a pop which came straight from the outside, can you cash it from the inside? The machlokas is a poskim. Pesachet Shuvah says no. The Chazish screams about a yes. But he assumes, and we'll discuss that, I guess, not next year, I'll leave with Kal. Sorry, but those won't be here. But he assumes that Haggadah pulls out everything. From the inside, the machlokas haposkim. Pesachet Shuvah says no, and the Chazish screams about a yes. But he assumes, and we'll discuss that, I guess, not next year, I'll leave with Kal. Sorry, but those won't be here. But he assumes that Haggadah pulls out everything. Me'ever le'ever. So you can even take it from the outside. Oh, that's what the Chazish said. But he was right, Pashas. It goes straight through, yes. Clearly, the lining will fall off, but otherwise it's the same thing. Part of the lining will probably fall off. I think it's also about safety for the line. So it prevents it.
What do
you
have, like knives or forks or
something
like that?
Usually, if it's a knife and a fork, you can be cash with a clearishin. You put it in a clearishin on the fire, good enough. The discussion, what about those little crevices? Try to clean the best you can. Okay, did everybody finish all the shouts about kasher and kalim? Everything's done? Good question. He wants to give you cash or a newspaper. That's a very good question. Well, let's discuss that right now. Can you cash or a newspaper? I don't know if I have time for that today. I don't know if we have time for everything. Number one, the famous Mr. Request that spawned the whole controversy over here. Ladia's Daiti, the first letter, Mr. Valdik. The first letter where he defends Mr. Request. Mr. Request was attacked, Shalola Indian. They attacked on all kinds of extraneous grounds, and no one spoke to the point. So I just want to give my shkarach to the Baal Machaber of the first letter, who is the best response of all. Because Mr. Request's response, you know, too partisan. I can't blame Mr. Request, and he got attacked, hit back. But this cause of Ashlishi, this third party, was beautiful. It was a beautiful letter. Explain it if you want to attack. Don't attack the person, attack the issue, which was never discussed really in an intelligent way. The next letter has to get my most severe condemnation. It talks about the chiyuv of the yeshiva to take care of the population of its students in various graduate schools, even if they may, after all, they're not Jewish, so of course they can do whatever they want. As if, yeah. I think she should establish a murder club here in Yeshiva. Why not? A murder club. I mean, what's wrong with murder? There could be many parties in that club. You have to put on the radio any day. There's a murder club. They're not Jewish. A murder club. What's the problem? I presume they only murder each other. I mean, I can't imagine. I heard Rabban Soloveitchik today at Bar Mitzvah. But you have to stand up for the injustice of a goy against a goy. That was the third kind of injustice. Moshe made it up against. One guy was the father of the Benos Yisro. So you can't have a murder club, okay? The Baron and the Paskut. So you can't have a homosexual club either. The Torah said they're both also even for goyim. It's immoral and you can't have it. Yes, you can't have it. Now, Smiling John. I'm going to say it here. Smiling John. I feel bad for Smiling John. I mean, he's a nice guy, it looks like. But he just doesn't understand. He doesn't get it. That is an Easter of Nibble Pet. He's talking to himself. He says, he uses the word Nibble Pet. The story Smiling John quite fairly could be understood as Nibble Pet. instead of, catch this now, a character study of certain individuals who employ Nibble Pen. This is Bris Gitarra. The halacha is that this Nibble Pen, you're not supposed to countenance it. Now, even if it's an individual, a personality, a story, not. It's not. And as Rabbi Kahn pointed out, we'll skip it a little, we'll get to the point out so beautifully, it's a question of sensitivity. That's exactly the problem. People become desensitized. Yeah, it's a little pep. We have to scream and say, no, we don't want to have this sink to this level. We spoke about this once before, you know, they have to be very careful. The Levush says that you say, men and women sit together by a chasna. You can't say Shasimcha Bavona because the Shina is on Shoros. Well, nowadays, this little bunch of people are used to sitting men and women together, so then maybe you're allowed to say it. So how far do you go this nowadays they're used to? So some tell you say nowadays they're used to, because they're used to it, so there's no hero head, no hero oven. So others want to say, nowadays, they used to have hero oven. They used to have Averis, they used to have Zeus, that they're used to. You know, it became what they're used to. Where the line drawn that they are used to. See, I mean, they're used to Nibble Pen. Well, you hear from, I mean, they're used to. No! That's an Aveira, and it doesn't, and the Gemara is prohibited. It's prohibited, no matter what. You get used to it. No such thing. Maybe true that perhaps the full shock and whatever other negative impact the word has doesn't have anymore. Doesn't matter. Still answer intrinsically. Sitting together, men and women, said, Levush Kapaska, there's nothing intrinsically wrong. It's a hero achet, there's no hero achet. So then, secretation still come about. Weiter. Yes.
What defines these
class of words? Hakol, Yodim, Kala, Loma, Nipchas, and Lachupa. El Kol Amenagel, as Piv. That's what's called Nibble Pet.
It only includes sexual references, but words that
would
normally...
Oh, say, put words in my mouth. I said that the Nibble Peh, as the Gemara has it, refers to Kala Lamanav Salachub. There could be other words which fit into the general category of Nibble Peh, even if it may not be in the actual specific limited context of the Gemara, which also shouldn't be used. What are they? Use your own good judgment.
Are they but, society created them? Words that 200 years ago no one would say, they
are,
you know, as a
bias,
we use the
words
in the second
thought. I'll comment on that, because it depends on what you mean. You mean, and, the? I'm not sure what words you're referring to.
No, like, for example,
can't say
the shear.
Can't
say
the shear, that's very nice.
You could never say a woman was pregnant. That was a bad word.
Was pregnant 20 years ago?
Right. Or, for example,
really?
Is it really? White eating good chicken? No, they didn't want to say, you know, a breast of a chicken.
Oh, really?
Certain words were very...
Why do you use the word doc mean? I don't understand. Anyway, I don't want to get into that. I have to repeat my journalistic comment, which I mentioned to the author yesterday. So we quote in any of our... this is a Torah journalism, not newspaper journalism. When we speak about a person, any person, we try to refer to him in a formal sense. And although today they refer to it by the last name without any titles, that's not appropriate for B'nai Torah. So they have a beautiful article which wishes well for Rabbi Bernstein Shalit, they should have a refuah. So they have Rabbi Bernstein, Rabbi Bernstein, Rabbi Lewis Bernstein, Rabbi Bernstein, and then somehow the editors must have changed into the word Bernstein. I object to that. I objected to it last year also. I think Chesky wrote a letter last year, which is not the same, to the Stern College paper. They talk about Blau and all these other notes, so what kind of chutzpah is this? So the response was, that journalistic standard. I said the same thing. You get used to it. You get used to Hiruchet. You get used to Bizitamina Chachamim. You get used to it, yeah. In front of the rabbi Salavechik, you know, blah, 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 blah. They get used to it. Everything's academic and literary. Chutzpah. We have Torah standards. And our Torah, you don't want to write down a rabbi every time. There's a new word in America now. It just started last few decades. Rib. Rabbi, R with a dot. Okay, so at least you knew that. And you know, I tell you that, you know, I don't know where I came from. I guess I'm such an old society. Even, must have been a time in when this was the norm. Even if you would refer to some person, not a Talmud Chacham, not an individual, without a last name, without just by the last name, but when I came up, when I grew up, if it was a woman, a bissel derecher, you know, a little bit, you know, chivalry. They're always referred to Mrs. or Miss. Once they saw the Miss, they left out the Miss too. And they referred to the woman by, you know, stern paper, they referred to bacon. I mean, what? What a chutzpah, b'nishalom. Chutzpah, I can't believe it. How can they teach this thing? There's no derecher. So the answer was, well, that's the journalistic style. Yes, the journalistic style have no derecher. That's exactly it. You can't be part of that. We have to protest against it. It's terrible. Right. I think it was great. Okay. How could I? Well, you said? Oh, I missed it already? Oh, yeah. Oh, look at this. However, the concert was not without controversy. As free. I'm from free. It's a retiree year because I'm free. Told the commentator that he was asked not to sing his new song, Baruch Haba Melech HaMashiach. One source, who asked not to be named, commented that, quote, under the pressure of certain Russian yeshiva, Free was asked not to sing the song. This is due to the belief that the word should not be sung until Mashiach has actually arrived. And I'm not sure what they're referring to. I'll tell you one story. Some of them I know was a gabbai in the Lubavitch shul. He had a shavuot in Lubavitch. And every week they made a Mashiach there for the Rebbe, Admor, Admor Menachem Mendel Ben Chaim. All of a sudden, some Chanoi came and said, what's wrong with you? You have to make a Mishaberech, Adnor Menachem Mendel Ben Chana, Melech HaMashiach. And he called me up, what should he do? I told him, if that's what it's up to, you have to resign the Gabbos, be Moshe Nefesh, you're not permitted to say it. It was a whole fight, initially, a whole fight. I said, why? Because what do you think what you're saying? What are you talking, what are you doing? This is mamish, it's chachmonu, it's not a Beitianism. They're taking somebody and they're making him into a Mashiach. I'm not speaking as an opponent, the lifelong opponent of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. No, I'm not coming from that angle at all. Chas v'chalila. But to make, say that, to make someone into a Mashiach, it's mamish the Beitianism, chachmonu, it's not. You know what happened in chapter 3 after the bubble burst? The Mashiach better come before the bubble burst. What can I say? However it comes, whoever it comes. If the Rebbe decides to make the Lubavitch a Melech HaMashiach, fine. Whoever he decides to make, the Rebbe Hashem's decision, who's the Melech HaMashiach. But not that a few chassidim are going to decide who the Melech HaMashiach is. It's craziness. That's what I thought, that this stance that Mr. Fried was asked to assume here this Mashiach was a correct stance. What does that mean? Who are they talking to? We all know what they're talking to them. It's not even veiled. It's clear. So I think it's not right. So I was at a chasna, and one of the talmidim, they started singing Baruch Haba Melech HaMashiach. I was talking to Rav Shechta, and I asked him, should I tell the Alzheimer's Sagalushin? So I see my full responsibility. I said, should I ask the band to stop? He said, what stop? Where stop? He said, what? Do you hear what they're singing? Yeah, maybe I should go and ask them to stop, he said. Until I got there, they changed the tune. The next night, I was again in a Sagalushin, but one other than the talmidim. Again, Baruch Haba. I said, oh no, I have to go stop him. But they changed the words. Baruch Haba Chosen V'Kala. They must have been tipped off by somebody that that's the problem. Okay.
It depends on where he comes from, this whole...
Mashiach will come, I'll be the first one to run and say Baruch Haba Melech HaMashiach. When it comes?
That's what he says. He prefaces it on his tape. He prefaces it on his tape. When Mashiach comes...
That's the preface on the perhaps on the tape. But I've been at many, many places where they don't have that preface. They probably make a song popularize it. The preface is eliminated, okay? That's the problem. MYP reform. Billy Joel. I'm not sure what it means about this, these figures and this and that. Let's hope that they reform, and it should be a positive reform, not a negative reform. It would reform at a very checkered history. All right. Weiter. academic lack at the Yeshiva College. I was very surprised, and the dean was in my car today, he confirmed the figures, that the amount of people majoring in law, medicine, and business is 83%. He said, yeah, he said, today it's 80% something or other. He said that, that's an amazing. That's not true. What other things? He's okay, get a job with it. So it's a problem, but I want to say, for the record, I said it many times, I went to this school, and when I was here, there was a tremendously smaller amount of pressure in Tamid. I felt very little pressure. The people didn't have this pressure. You don't have to get an A in everything. You have to, you know, set your... And she talks about the course of the guidance council. The people, they're freshmen. They walk in the first day, have to know what they're going to do. Get to, it's tremendously pressurized. It was part of the Eric Estrella experience. Compressed at the college for a small amount of time. The part of it is you have to get there now. You have to this. And who are they called over here? Somebody... People have to be so successful in money, more successful than their parents. The parents took 20 years, so they made bucks, and they have to make bucks soon as they get married. Nope. Far be it for me to be critical. But one thing I want to do is just say one thing, and that is, I say to Rosh Lakeba Vlach Charoi, a person wants to spend more time on a circuit establishment than was spent in the old years, is to take that time away from shtus. You should take it away from learning. I have to be honest with you. I'll be telling you also up front. When I was in yeshiva, there was much less learning going on. Before people went there to Israel, Beis Medrash, Mandachar Shmei, what was it, Beis Medrash? It was like a period that they come at 9 and leave at 12, and there was no spirit of Beis Medrash. At night, you can go bowling in the Beis Medrash at night, and when I was here, Rabbi Cohen was here, and I was about one or two other people, and that was it. And then now, Baruch Hashem, at night, the Beis Medrash, thank God, much fuller. Then we have to give credit for that same Eretz Israel experience. We get the main credit for that, in my opinion. It's Shlamim, not just. So it's just a class, but it's a shiur. Torah is a full-time occupation. So I imagine that in this class also, in this shiur, many people also in the law, medicine, or business. It takes a lot of time, a lot of pressure. You have to try very hard to find more time to learn as well. How you do it, I don't know. I have to be a juggler. I have to find the time. The main thing is no extracurricular activity. How many times have I said it? Oh, if you do it, do a shtick. Put yourself on the master for no work. You can do that, so tavo lecha bracha. But to do real work, yeah, that, I'm told that guy did no work at all. Get on that.
Taking down songs.
Spiritually speaking, you have to be very careful with your time. Time is very precious. There's a pressure cooker here, and you have to be very careful to take care of yourself. Okay, fine. Right. To tell. This is really the failure of Torah Mada. If you understand it the way some understand it. There's no Torah Mada. This is what Rabbi Lander called at a recent convention, Torah Ba'umnus. Business, law, and medicine is what we call Umnus. Umnus, we hope, the key of a Kala. We hope. It's not always so Kala, not always so... But it's an Umnus. There's very little of this ferment. In my time, it's much more of it. When I was here in Yeshiva, precisely because it was less pressure on the Talmidim to be business, law, medicine, to excel in all the grades, etc., etc., and more time to think. There was less learning. So they also had more time to think about the crazy machshavas, whatever. And now, people are so busy, they have no time to neither for Torah nor for Mada. They're just busy with their careers. So I'm asking you, as my Talmidim, you spend your time in Torah as much as possible. And whatever the career you have to study for, you have my bracha to be matzliach. But that's it. There's no need for any the side points and the other things. You don't understand the luxury of time that they used to have to get involved in other endeavors. It's just not enough time. Pressure, not enough time. Okay. The play. I don't know. He gave an endangered truth a fighting chance. I don't know. I spoke about the play already last time. Let's speak that again. Just, we already made a reference to that the topic earlier today. So, we're against it. Okay. This is Rabbi Kahn's introduction. Yeshiva, yes. The problem that he writes so beautifully, that the yeshiva was founded as a yeshiva, and everything else was appended upon the yeshiva. The Edison Centennial, a few years ago, if you were anywhere you were here. I'm here on my show at Edison Centennial, I think that was a long time ago. Yeah. 86, that's
2 years
ago. Yeah? Centennial of what? of the yeshiva, the Eitz Chaim yeshiva, which was founded in 1886. That was the centennial, okay. So that's the centennial. What about the Sitan? With the university, with this university, was only chartered 43 years before that. And the college before the centennial. And the college only began, if I'm not mistaken, in 1928, which was how many years before the centennial? I'll figure it out. 58 years before the centennial, whatever it is. So, the what centennial? The centennial is our core, and the yeshiva is the ikar. That was the founding thing. And everything else should be considered secondary. I must tell you that if Rabbi Kahn writes here so beautifully, because of the realities of the world, money, things got out of hand. Started a medical school. How can you be against medical school? So many wonderful, wonderful talmidim of mine, I'm just a wonderful Rebbe, have gone through the medical school and have been able to matzliach careers because of the medical school. Not that it doesn't have its own problems in halacha. Okay, there are other problems. But it did accommodate from talmidim, but that time it was very hard to get into other schools. And who knows? We say, oh, now they get into Harvard, they get into, who knows, they would have come to that had not been for Jewish medical school. Yeah, Naniach, all that. But aside from the problems, they say, how can I have a medical school under a yeshiva auspices, quote unquote, with unfortunate chil Shabbos and tuchem meisim and abortions and gays and alamin zaken? I said, these are all problems. But aside from all those problems, which are serious problems, and maybe on those problems you might argue, maybe you should argue yotze have seder b'schara, maybe. But the biggest problem is that it made the quote yeshiva university into this multi-million with all the federal grants, the whole story. So that now it just became a big bureaucracy. And the quote yeshiva, which is the whole yisod, is now pushed into a corner. Some of you may have heard in history books, maybe before most of you were born, that the Rav's speech in 1970, I remember it like yesterday, it's called the ghost speech. I'm sorry, I see ghosts. That was the year that they changed the charter of the yeshiva, and they made Reitz, the yeshiva itself, an affiliate of Yeshiva University, as opposed to being an integral part of the yeshiva. And the Rav's ghost, and to give you, I can summarize the ghost in one word. The one word was Harvard. Harvard, as you know, was founded as a divinity school. Now Harvard knows anything but the divinity school. They have still have in one corner of divinity school. The Rav had a ghost, saw a ghost, and why is it going to become a Harvard? And it was ticketing and tumbling and this and that. What forced it? What forced Dr. Belkin, Zichrono Lecha, B'shaydeh to do it? Simple. Money. Because they get federal money and state money for Einstein and this and that. They had to sever the yeshiva from the university. Now it's a crazy hybrid. The yeshiva is yeah, you know, just Shtei HaSivim, as Rabbi Kahn said it so beautifully. There were yeshiva to some and the university to others. Rabbi Kahn gets up and screams, Gaval, yeshiva, yes! It's a yeshiva. Whatever else is added was added, it should be a tofel. Even if you believe in Torah Umad, it's Torah Umad, not the other way around. But in the books, in the finances, you go all these fancy bureaucrats here in the offices, what's the yeshiva? It's nothing. It's only university. It's not even both. Yeshiva is like Harvard University. The word yeshiva is just an adjective. It's an adjective, not a noun, it's an adjective. Yeshiva University, Harvard University, St. John's University. It's just university. That's the big problem of it. You have a question?
Just an observation. What about the people who are here who wouldn't be having a night study? They wouldn't be having a shiur.
Show me. Where are they?
I have friends who aren't from where they came. They went to some of the day or something. They were in one of their schools. And they went to Yeshiva University. My friend's there. Maybe I should go. And they come here and they start learning some Torah. They're not the fruitless people, but they are learning Torah because they're here.
No. Yeah, but every Yadus thing, you have to be very careful. You have to schar be afseda. Be careful. I'm not casting away the Shabbos. But at the same time, you have to be very, very careful. Very careful. Yes? Let's go back. Slow. I'm just speaking from my own perspective. I was here in the 60s as a student. 60s. I mentioned to you when it came to this worthwhile gay that the Rebbeim are right. You know, the Rebbeim are right when they said don't bring words, they meant because of the women. And because of the gays, and even the other Mashanib, whatever it may be. Let me tell you, I thought recently Rabban Soloveitchik was right. Rabban Soloveitchik, he left the yeshiva. 1966. And the official reason they left was the Belfer building. What? You couldn't understand what he's saying. Yeah. They built a big building. So what? Rabbi Aaron said, this is the end of the yeshiva. Why? Big building. It's going to be involved with all the government monies. It's going to tower over the yeshiva. It's going to be called. Even the fact that it symbolically is 22 stories, whatever it is, and where it was. Whatever it may be. This is, you know, we thought, what is he talking about? Now I'm beginning to realize that this is what Rabban Khan said, this is what Rabban Soloveitchik maybe meant. You can't dwarf the yeshiva. You just can't afford to do it. So if the other components are off campus, there's an Einstein, there's a Cardozo, there's a this, and there are other places, nope, Mela. But when Mineu, hey, within the yeshiva, they build a whole bureaucracy, and they give the bureaucracy over to all kinds of people who are not the Beruah HaTorah. It's a very serious problem. Very often a ben Torah doesn't feel at home here in the yeshiva. That's terrible. That could be chalil v'chas, lead to the end of the yeshiva. If a Torah don't feel at home here, sometimes you will come from other backgrounds, they talk, I don't feel at home, so they can't stay. They can't stay. They can't stand walking around and find all these crazy things going on. So most of us who are still here, you know, we have very, we said before, we're desensitized, unfortunately. We see things going on which really shouldn't go on, and nope. So we have this desensitization process. It took effect on us, Baba Naseno or Rabin. And that just once in a while, we blow up when some outrage transpires. With those other people who blow up the minute they walked in here. For whatever reason, like I think of five reasons, to blow up immediately, which I already got used to. So you have to be very careful that it should, you have to say what's the ego, what's the tafel. It's very important. I'm so happy this article. I told her, I met Sidney Rabban in my mitzvah today. I told her, I'm very happy that you wrote this article. I really should have written something. I told you that if I had time, I would write something. I would have written something different. I would have been more discussing the actual thesis of Dr. Lee. He was talking in more in general terms. But I'm so happy that he wrote it. Someone said something. And they printed it, Baruch Hashem. You know, not to be taken for granted either. Right. An open letter to the Yeshiva University community.
After also, possible to have yeshiva in the university existing, have the yeshiva should fight at the forefront, and the university should
wither away
and die. Is that necessarily
that's
the view of
yeshiva
university that we have to have
this? Did Rabbi Aaron say that yeshiva has to die? I don't remember
you
saying that. Die?
The title itself indicates that. Yeshiva, yes, as opposed to what? As opposed to the last time, yeshiva, yes, university, yes. Now we
deposit yeshiva, yes. No. Dr. Lee's thesis was, if I were to excuse me, that there could be a university which could be the same with any other university and yeshiva like any other yeshiva. So Rabbi Khan is saying it can't be a university, any other university. It could be a university which is different. And that university which is different, yes. But it's all its university which is influenced by the yeshiva. That's what he means. That's why I understand it. I don't think he means to close down the university completely. Then Josh is right. Close the university completely. So it would be a very nice yeshiva. And there are a lot of other yeshivas in the world. I'm not a fakarit. Understand? I'm speaking to Pitnoris, the YU quote fan. That there's a mockum to have a yeshiva, which is a university or a college at least. University basically, which I don't even say all kinds of other things. At least a college attached to it. But the college shouldn't be run al pi Torah. He calls it the Netziv. The Netziv said that you have to have a Dibur Echol to get from teachers. In the Chinami. We've never made an attempt here systematically to get from teachers. Never made such an attempt. On the contrary, it's almost an attempt to, you know, to be Bedavka, you know, open-minded to any teacher, irrespective of his background. Now, to my mind, it probably depends on what he's teaching. And, you know, he talks about Roman and novels and all kinds of other things. It's a very serious problem. And I want to tell you, let me ask you a question. Jack, I want to ask you a question that you mentioned before. What's your major? Okay. Let me ask you a question. Lu Yitzuya. Okay, let's say Lu Yitzuya. Talk about the reputation of Yeshiva University. Now, we know that universities today, colleges, can offer any, they can make up any rules they want. I mean, so we live in a very, it's not like it used to be the generation. They can make any requirements you want, more or less. Lu Yitzuya. The Yeshiva College would be the same kind of Yeshiva College. But they would drop any class which has what he calls the Romanus, which means the literature which involves either Christianity or involves Arius, maybe certain other art things should not arise. Those few classes will be dropped. And that will remain the same. Is there a chance that you might not have to shoot the roast for that? Do you think so?
As you toward the university would be happy. And therefore, that might not the exact dropping of the courses would affect my students, but the perception of the university of the Jewish society would drop. I think it would definitely drop.
You, when you say Jewish, you mean Orthodox or non Orthodox?
Orthodox.
Orthodox too. Okay, let's hear it. We have an opinion which says, and I'm happy to hear what you said, because you probably reflect a very significant chord.
I'm not saying that it's wrong to drop it.
What Josh is saying is that if Yeshiva would drop, Yeshiva College would drop the course that Rabbeim and Talmidim find objection, they keep coming to you about. Basically, English literature and art. That's really it. Know anything else? Maybe some philosophy. Very good. And if not, we don't only mean courses which per se have to be objectionable, but there's certain teachers that are objectionable. If they would have dropped the objectionable teachers and courses, okay, would leave 95% of the curriculum intact, and would remove 95% of the shilas that Rabbeim get. Yeah, I'm telling you, the same move. Would leave 95% of the courses intact and would remove 95% of the shilas that Rabbeim get complaints that the curriculum has certain things which are inappropriate. I think it's a fair estimate. There's always going to be some shilas, but that's on biology. A guy teaches Darwinism will be a tuple. Or a guy teaches, physics or wrong. But 95% will be eliminated. And on the other hand, 95% will be able to, of the courses. You might say, look at all the courses. 5% is the problem. Lanier's dieting.
No, you can teach English literature without teaching.
Absolutely not. Christianity. English composition would remain, and English literature could remain in terms of studying.
English comp is 6 courses, and English literature
would
remain
for 90%
of the department.
So hold
up,
the whole.
That's why I'm saying.
I'm not saying it would be a terrible thing in the town of Yeshiva, but the town reputation of Yeshiva University, which you've done, is said that all literature is now not part of our curriculum.
It's all literature.
Why all literature? We put a rub in charge, get a rub with a PhD in literature, or a bar and lift and see, we'll ask again. One second. Now, so you'll ask him to put in stuff which will be non-controversial. No one will dispute him. Even though he may like Milton, he's well aware of the fact that people don't like Milton. What doesn't exist?
It's a literature requirement that studying anything but perhaps, maybe, if you're lucky, Jewish literature, and you manage to get rid of all the kofrim, and not have a shayla halacha on some of the literature you're reading.
I don't know what you're talking about. You know how many works have been written in the English language? How many thousands upon thousands of works?
Right.
So you pick a small percentage, see how they took Ralph Emerson. That's what I told when I was in high school. He wrote some beautiful, beautiful... Can I ask a question? Why is there a fear? First of all, Shakespeare, there are some Shakespeare plays, I think everyone would be masculine, but you can study them, even though maybe some, but no, you can study Shakespeare. Now, beyond that, there's no fear to study the literature of every last century and decade. Kids, I'm going to take too much time. What I'm trying to say over here is that yeshiva, yes, whatever else has to fall wherever it has to fall. That's what I think. But at the same time, I'm not telling you that the university should wither away and die. I don't think that's what. For carrots, let the Talmidim who are law, learn business, and medicine, learn medicine. 83% are learning those things, right?
Yeshiva University.
What's wrong with that? Did you win? You're in any way 83%.
Yeah,
all right.
You can go to PO's
60%
of your
computer. That's right. Also, that's true. I don't have a list in front of me. I'll guess you to bring me for Sunday. The other 17%, what are they majoring in? My guess is probably computers. Well, 1 second, 10 out of 200, that's 5%. Okay, so 5% is computers. You said 10 out of 10, they want 200 graduates. That's 5%. Now we're left with only 12%. Jewish studies majors for sure, another 5%. Math 5%. So you have 2%. History's not bad. I went on history. I have very, I received almost no complaints in the history department. Almost none. How many majors are there in those in English literature and in the, and art?
It's
a de facto history anyway. So make it the juror and... But the same way as you say, after it's a matter of principle, because it's not Lamaisa. It's already a matter of principle. The other way it's not Lamaisa. Okay, we'll leave it. Rabosai. Sunday we start Hazara. With the Mishnah and the Chavches. Chavches Amal. Chomet shall not be sha'orvel of a pensat muta bahano. Shall Yisrael also bahano. This is an issue called Chomet sha'orvel of a pensach, which applies if it was owned by a Jew on Pesach, and it's also bahano after Pesach. If it was owned by a Goy on Pesach, then it's muta bahano after Pesach. Everyone knows this for the Pashat this way. We accept it, we realize it, most people do not realize it. It's a machlokas hatanoim. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon. Was this in the din d'oraisa? Rabbi Yehuda's shita? Or is it in the rabbanan? Mishim knas, which is Rabbi Shimon's shita. Indeed, the Gemara suggests, and later on, according to Rabbi Yehuda, chomet overall of a pesach will be also even if it belongs to a goy. The Torah institution that we know known as mechiras chomet and all that stuff wouldn't exist according to that opinion. But the ma'aseh we pass like Rabbi Shimon, that chomet overall of a pesach is a mishim knas, and as a result, if it's only a knas, if it was owned by a Jew. If it's owned by a Jew, then the Chazal said you cannot have any hanor from it after Pesach. But if it's owned by a Goy, then it's okay. This is ABCs. That's found in the Mishnah of Chavches and Aleph, as we know how it comes out halacha lemaisa. Now, there can be cases in which, and this happens very frequently on a practical basis, which we're not exactly sure. Who owned this chametz on Pesach? Was it owned by a Jew, or was it owned by a Goy? What's the halacha in such a circumstance? We just don't know. If we know it's owned by a Jew, let's chazer again. If we know it's owned by a Jew, then it's prohibited. If we know it's owned by a Goy, then it's permissible. What if we don't know? We push it, don't know. What's the halacha then? At first glance, push it. Sfeika de Rabbanan Lekula. We don't know. Sfeika, as we said before, we pass like a Shimon. There's a din de Rabbanan, and it's a din de Rabbanan, so then it's going to be permissible after Pesach is over. Okay, we don't know. Some authorities are more machmir. Depends on the sugya, and of all places, in Erevin. Lemaisa, it's a machlokas. Some say it's also, some say it's mutter. However, there is a case in which everyone would seem to agree that it's mutter, where we're not even sure if it existed on Pesach. We don't know if this was in the world on Pesach. Maybe it was only produced, came to the world after Pesach was over. That's more kal. If you look at the Magen Avraham, and he said that would be even more lenient. So again, if you have a doubt whether it was existed on Pesach or not, then we assume it's mutter after Pesach. If it certainly existed on Pesach, but we're not sure whether it was owned by a Jew, owned by a Goy, then it's a machlokas in the Achronim. Machlokas probably in the Rishonim, in Rashi and Tosfos in Erevin, of Samach Dal and Amidbeis. It's a question. Well, this is very relevant to the mind. This is for an introduction. What happens in the case when you're in doubt? Now another case. The question now becomes, what happens if the individual didn't realize that there was a violation of Vayiro by Yamatzim? Loneliness. He couldn't help it. What's it did? So Shulchan Aruch and Siman Tov Mem Ches says it doesn't make a difference, even whether it's a shogeg or an ones, no matter what, the existing Easter of Chomet Shavuot of Pesach applies in any event. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. The Mishnah Berurah cautions that lo kol ha'onsim shavim, not all types of situations beyond my control are equivalent. There can be circumstances in which it would be permissible. And the rule of thumb, which many of Poskim accept, is as follows. There could be two kinds of ways that was beyond my control. One, I know about it. I know I own the chametz, but I just can't get to it in time. I'm not able physically to be able to get the chametz out of my possession. Can't do it. It's across the river and the ferry stops working. Whatever it may be, I can't get there. In that case, the poskim say, the chazal made a low plug and say it's prohibited anyway, even though it really was beyond your control. You couldn't really get to it. Doesn't make a difference. Afal pikein, chazal, asadano. We see the Ran talks about it, that there exists an Yisrael, chom and shavu of a Pesach, even if the Yisrael was over by Rav by Amate, be onus. However, some authorities maintain, if it's a situation in which the person doesn't even know about it, not just that he couldn't get it, he doesn't even know about it. He doesn't know that he owns it. He thought I got rid of all his chametz. Doesn't even know about it. So then there are many authorities who maintain in that kind of situation that the gzeir was never said. Again, I repeat, if you knew about it or you just couldn't get to it, then according to some poskim, the gzeir does apply. But if you didn't even know about it, then according to these, many of these same poskim, the gzeir was not said. If you know about it, you can't get to it, the gzeir was said. If you didn't even know about it, then perhaps the gzeir does not apply. That's an important case. Now there's another case. This is the most common case of all. This really happens, can happen in your house anytime. A Jew is mevatel ol chametz. He's mevatel ol chametz. He's mevatel ol chametz. And after the bittul chametz is over, he thinks he has no chametz lying around the house. After Pesach, lo and behold, he finds chametz was there the whole time, the whole week. So at first glance, it's no problem. Because what does bittul mean? We learned the first day of the year. Almost. What does bittul mean? Either it means for the alma or it means heft, whatever it may mean. It may mean, but it's not mine. It's not by Rabbi Yamatze, it's the Fair Shigamar. But Daraisa, no, finish the sentence. The Bittul be Alma Sagi. So Bittul works on the level of Daraisa. There is no issue. Despite that fact that the Fair Shigamar, based on the Rishalmi, which the Rosh quotes, but despite the fact, nevertheless, if you did Bittul on Chumash and you find it in your house after Pesach, it's also Bahano. Irrespective of the Bittul. Why is that so? Doesn't make any sense at first glance. The answer is, we're afraid of an insincere Bittul. You say, he'll say butl, it doesn't really mean butl. But just in case he is, we say we impose a knas on him in any event. That's what the quoted in Shulchan Aruch.
Why do we impose a double knas if he's sending us?
Oh, hold on a second, slow. So on both sides, it seems to me though, that there could be a very great leniency b'zman hazeh if someone finds chametz in his house after Pesach of which he was unaware earlier. Because you see, nowadays, most of us, all of us, just about, do something called Bechiras Chametz, which we'll be discussing at great length. Great length. In a minute. But Bechiras Chametz, you know, there's always a fear. Maybe the Bechiras Chametz didn't take effect on this particular piece of Chametz. It's, you know, it's an old crusty sandwich found on top of your closet. So maybe, well, then it wouldn't be, but you wouldn't want to use it anyway. But maybe it's something which you didn't realize you had. He didn't specify it in your shtar, which we're going to come to in a few moments. So the discussion is the mechira chal, is the mechira not chal, etc. If the mechira is definitely chal, nothing to talk about. Avada, it belongs to a goy, so there's no problem. But in case perhaps it wasn't chal, maybe you didn't do a mechira because you thought you didn't have any chametz. You checked the answer, so you found nothing. And on top of that, you did a bittul. Then the poskim are making. The poskim say, that in it, well, selling it means in the sale for some reason it's invalid, it ends up in your house, in your possession, you don't really realize in your possession. And even those poskim would ordinarily say that even in that case it's prohibited. They reject the Torah, which you mentioned earlier. But if you have bittul on top of that, if you have bittul as well, then just about everybody agrees that it would be permissible. You have a combination. One second. No, bittul itself is prohibited, I told you. If you do bittul and you find the chametz, it's prohibited. But here, you didn't just only do bittul. Aside from the bittul, which you did, aside from the bittul, also you were in violation of the ones because you didn't think you really had it. You thought that all your chametz that you even knew about in the world was sold to a guy, you throw out the window, and you just did your bittul as sort of a fail-safe. The pasuk is as follows. The only reason why we ask it bittul to the chashash ha'arava, maybe you're insincere about the whole thing, but since the guy is an honor, what do you mean he's an honor? He tried to get rid of everything he could possibly get rid of. He did everything he possibly could. The circumstantial evidence proves that he is a good fellow, getting rid of everything he possibly can. So So something ended up in his house he didn't even know about, or he just simply was prevented from getting rid of it for some technical reason. So then there's no longer a Chashash Arama. Then the pistol works. That's what the rest of the combination which the Mepharshim explained. Okay? This then was, if you will, a general introduction to the sugya of, to the Easter of Chomet She'avah L'Pesach, when it applies, when it doesn't apply. We're going to come back to one process a little bit later, but now I'd like to shift our attention to Mechiras Chomet. And the reason for shifting the connection between these two is obvious. Mechiras Chomet is a way, aside from avoided by Yerobah Yimote, is a way for some technical reason. So then there's no longer a Chashash Arama. Then the pistol works. That's what the rest of the combination which the Mepharshim explained. Okay? This then was, if you will, a general introduction to the sugya of, to the Easter of Chomet She'avah L'Pesach, when it applies, when it doesn't apply. We're going to come back to one process a little bit later, but now I'd like to shift our attention to Mechiras Chomet. And the reason for shifting the connection between these two is obvious. Mechiras Chomet is a way, aside from avoided by Yerobah Yimote, is a way to circumvent the prohibition of Chomet She'avah L'Pesach. Yes, question. We assume the Chomet She'avah L'Pesach, but only Aser Ba'Achila, but it's even Aser Ba'Hanah. So all this is referred to Nisa Hanah as well. Okay. Rabosai. Yes. Could be a Mezik. It would also be an honor. Is it the best you could be? Rabosai, Mechiras Chomet. The biggest problem which is raised by the Mepharshim in the context of Mechiras Chomet is, does the non-Jew who sold the Chomet really have what we call Das Kona? Does he really intend to acquire it or not? Now we brought our famous Mr. Brown into the Shia. I think that he really has Kavanah to be Kona. He's sophisticated, he knows what it means. To be Kona is something that he's very likely to sell it back later. He understands. But I would say that many of the less sophisticated members of the non-Jewish faith aren't so attuned to this kind of thinking. And maybe they just go through it as a ceremony, they don't really know what's happening so much. They know a little bit, but they don't really, may not have the full-fledged, complete and absolute Kavanah to be Kona the Chomet. What's the halacha such a circumstance? So in my opinion, this is a major dispute. Many factors come to play, and I want to discuss it with you briefly. One of the prime speakers over here is another Behuda. He says the Kinyan is absolutely chal, and he explains it in four words. What are the four words? Anybody know? Are you afraid that the guy in his heart doesn't really want to acquire the chametz? That's correct. Dvarim, we get the key word with heart. Dvarim shebelev einam dvarim. Matters of the heart are not matters. We disregard them. Who cares what you think in your heart? You went through all the formalities of a sale. You saw, we went through it before. You saw how we did it. So many kinyanim, one after another. What do you mean you have in your heart not to acquire it? You just say, dvarim shebelev, einam dvarim, and that's it. Even though that you may think that you don't really want it, nevertheless, you apply the principle, dvarim shebelev, einam dvarim. Oh, that's another Behuda that says so. And he says that it's to be a Torah, the guy would win, it's his, and therefore don't make any shaylas, it's hetagama, the mechira works on its face. No need to tinker, to tamper, to make fancy shtikla. The mechira works as is, because dvarim shebelev, einam dvarim. All right? Fine. That's his opinion. However, there are other poskim who disagree. They say, come on, it's not dvarim shebelev. It's dvarim shebelibo belev kol adam. They claim it's fairly clear from the circumstances that the guy doesn't have the full-fledged intention to be kohen as a chametz. If you have an intention to be kohen an object when you go into a store and buy it, he doesn't have such a high level of intention, which is what other poskim suggest. The question is, then how does it work? So when Aracha says, according to the Truma Tadeshan, the earlier source, that a person should give the chametz to the guy either by matana, either as a gift, or by davar mu'at, as it would be said in the Yiddish, a chotzechinim, right? Give it a half for free, discount, cut rate price. So the question becomes, why did the Shulchan Aruch advocate that? If you recall correctly, we learned that Mishnah Berurah does not advocate that. The Mishnah Berurah says you give the chametz to the guy at fair value. And if the guy can't afford to pay the money up front, so he gives a down payment, and the remainder is a non, excuse me, the outstanding loan, the non-payment of which in no way affects the sale. Well, that's keep it in the middle of it. That's how we do it nowadays. But there were some authorities who maintained, no, give it away either for free or for a very small fee. And the question, what does that accomplish? So apparently, if you look at the poskim, it accomplishes as follows. These poskim were concerned that perhaps the goy didn't really have intention to acquire the funds. And that puts us in great jeopardy. So they had come with a chiddush gadol ma'od, a tremendous, tremendous chiddush. And the chiddush is as follows. That even though a person may not have had complete das kone, even with full intention to bring it into his home, into his possession, nevertheless, in case of a gift, an outright gift, or a sale at very discounted price, is the equivalent of a gift, then we can invoke the principle known as das acheres makna also, which means as long as the Jew has intention, strong intention, that the chomer should transfer possession from himself to the non-Jew, then this intention carries the day, even in the absence of sincerity on the part of the supposed kona. He's just going through the motions, he doesn't really mean it. But nevertheless, since the makna is strong das, and the kona undoubtedly would want to collect it, to acquire it. Why? Because he can make a fortune on the deal by acquiring it. What's he doing? He's making money for a gift, or the matana for davar muat, that means he's paying $10 for $100 worth of chametz. So obviously he's gaining a lot on the deal. So then the fact that he views it as a fake is irrelevant, because the strong das aferes makna, as opposed to a case in which they would charge him the full value, where these poskim are afraid that they charge full value with the regular case of buying and selling, then this idea of das acheres makna would not be effective. That's why the Shulchan Aruch perhaps suggests selling itself for a small fee or for nothing, give it away for nothing. Whereas these days, in more recent times, the Mishnah Berurah already says 100 years ago, that we give it, we sell it at full price, because we want to make it into a bonafide sale with das makna, das tona, and then we try to approximate a regular, normal sale of profit. Okay, so that's a second approach to this. Again, the Dov Yehuda, and I have to go to the Chassam Sofer, many Gedolim say, what do you mean? It's Dvarim Shebelev, and it's Dvarim. So he has come out to be Kona the God. I had even discussed a case in which there'd be a lock on the door. I forgot to talk about that before. But if you put a lock on the door, don't give him any access. You won't let him in. But here's again a shout. Some say, so what? So the sale is valid anyway, just that I don't let him in, so I'm a crook, but the sale is still valid. Others suggest that if I put a lock on the door before I do the sale, and I throw away the key and then not give him any access, then it's clearly no good. Why? Because then it's not just Dvarim Shebelev, which you say the Eimah Dvarim. We have another expression. Dvarim what? Shebelevo Uvelev Kol Odo. It's in his heart and the heart of all people. We also sometimes call that an umdana, the mukha, an estimation which is clear beyond doubt that he doesn't have in mind to acquire chametz if he has deprived access to that chametz. What's the point of his owning it? That might be a problem, even according to these more lenient posts. Okay. That's, again, number two. That's number two. There's a table called the Masas Binyamin. The Masas Binyamin is quoted by the Mogen Avraham and the Mishnah Berurah as saying something very interesting. He says, the Pshat and the Mechaber. We said off Pshat the Mechaber. It's our own Pshat. The Mechaber with the Tumah Tadeshin. The Pshat is a Das Acheres Makna. You find that that's a very powerful force. If someone else wants to give it to you, then you can acquire it even though it's not such a strong das kona. Now, however, the Masas Binyamin has somewhat of a different approach. He says like this, listen carefully. When you sell to a goy, we don't have to measure chametz by the same criteria that we utilize
in analyzing a sale of a chair to a Jew or to a guy for that matter. You have to follow the kosher mishpat to the letter. And maybe if you follow the kosher mishpat in our case, he suggests perhaps with the insufficient doubt. Could he denies the fact that it's Dvarim Shebelev, I guess it's considered Dvarim Shebelev, he denies the idea of Das Acheres Machna, for whatever reason, as being a sufficient expression of Das. So if you follow the normal Shulchan Aruch Hashem Mishpat, you would say that it's insufficient, and that the comments might still be considered belonging to the Jew, and therefore would be a serious problem by Iran, a serious problem of comments over all of HaPesach. However, since the Rana taught us, the famous Rana Nafei, that really a Jew doesn't own any comments on Pesach. Just as Sar Nakosum, Kila Bishuso, to stick him with Vayiro, Vayimotze. So then suggest the Masas Binyamin, as long as you go through a sale, even though the sale may not be effective according to the strict letter of the law, but that sale is a clear indicator that the Lo Nichole is not happy to have any acquisition in it. And therefore the slightest little kinyan can work, even though the kinyan would not be effective in Dine Mamad, it's the Choshen Mishpat, since here the Chum is not really mine. It's Asa and Akosa Tehila B'Shuso. So the antidote for Asa and Akosa Tehila B'Shuso would be any little kind of a kinyan, even though it's not a full kinyan in the laws of Choshen Mishpat, that might be effective anyway for our purposes. So suggests the table called Matas Binyamin, which is quoted in the Magen Avraham, possibly in the Mishnah Berurah. Again, so we have three sheets. Either the kinyan is called completely at face value, normal kinyan like any other kinyan. He may not want it, but Dvarim Shebelev ain't Dvarim. That's not so, that would be good. There we have the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, Shulchan Tadesh. He sells for a pittance, so give it away for free. So I explained it to you, that it's based upon the principle called Das Acheres Machna, that if the seller is very desirous of selling, or the giver is giving, that it works even in the absence of a full-fledged das on the part of the recipient. That only works when the recipient's not chucking out too much money. But obviously, he's paying a full value, then he's not gaining anything on his deal. So then you would have to have a higher level of his assent, which you don't necessarily have. That's the Hawaiian Shas and the Machaber and the Chumas Hadesh. Then we have the Pirish of the Master Binyamin, who invokes the Ran. The Ran in the Gemara Davav, that's really it's Ena Bishu Shalada. Only has son across the Ti'ilu Bishu. So then we suggest that it's really not yours anyway. As long as you've told us that you don't really want it, you've gone through a Maisa Bechira, either may not be called completely, according to every last detail, it suffices to take it out of my rishus. That's the Master Binyam. And finally, the fourth view on this matter, the famous Bechor Ashor, known as the Tzvu Ashor, one of the Gedolei Yisrael had a famous some people call it the Tzvu Ashor, but that's his more common name, and then you have a Deya. And some refer to the Bechor Ashor. Same person, same existing for two different books. What did he write here himself in? A very big Kiddush. That our Chav Mechira's comments is only what we call a Haroma. What does Haroma mean? We'll see soon. It really means it's not really effective. And nevertheless, despite the fact that it's not effective, the sale wouldn't, in fact, not hold up. Afal PK, despite that fact, the din is that the mechira is a good, considered for our purposes, to be a good mechira. How is that possible? Well, says the Bechor Ashor as follows. We know he did a bittul. And we know that in the rights of a bittul beyond Messiah, so the entire function of the Mechira's Chometz is to take care of the Rabbanon Dikah problem. Right? Because with the rights to the Bittul beyond the Sagi, presumably he did Bittul. Since we're only discussing a rabbinical problem, a problem on the level of the Rabbanon, so then even though it's what we call a Ha-Rama, it's only a fake, it's not really valid, it's good enough. So suggests the Truma Sadesh. This opens up the Bechor Ashor, which is the Tzvu Ashor. This opens up two Pandora's box, not one. Let's discuss them one by one. The first Pandora's box, is that a fact that the bittul has relevance to the chometz that you sell to the gut? Many argue it's not true. The chorus is the dust of the goy, obviously you're keeping. It's not like the dust of the earth. That's not half good. You're commanded the prime dollar for it. You can take it at full market value. So therefore you cannot say that's considered as if it were ownerless or meaningless dust of the earth. That's not true. That's question number one. And let's respond to that immediately. I think the response is found really, if you look carefully in the Bialach of the Mishnah Berurah, where he says at the end of a long, maybe Mishnah Berurah himself, at the end of a very long piece, he says like this, that after you go through all the process of Mechiras Chametz, you should do a bittul afterwards. Why? Well, you never know. Maybe the Mechira has a slight problem with it, you never know. What that indicates to me is that when you do the bittul Chametz subsequent to the Mechira, although if the Mechira works, it's obvious there's no need for any bittul on this stuff that not belongs to John Brown. But al hatzad is the case. The mechira was somehow ineffective, so then you would assume that the bittul would work. So therefore, there's always a fallback position of Osai. The fallback position is the bittul. And the fallback position is the bittul, and the right of the bittul be al masagi. Therefore, the entire mechira, bottom line, after the entire issue is completed, and all the steps take place, including the subsequent bittul, and we look at it all from that perspective, the entire mechira is labeled on a level of the rabbanim. Because after all, the mechira, which will follow, will take care of it on a level of the right. Once we say it's down, knocked down to the level of the rabbanim, then the Bechor Shor sticks in his famous comment that our Rabbah works by the rabbanim. Now what's the question? That's right, it's a chiddush. Other possible, what kind of garbage is this? At the time that they did the Mechira, there was no bittul. There was no bittul. What are you talking about? So the answer which we were suggesting is that true, there was no bittul, yes. But it's Hashem's Sofon, there's going to be a bittul. So since the Mechira is counting on a bittul later on, as long as the Mechira will work, even on a weak level of Haram, but the Rabbanan, good enough, because on a Doraisa-Dikal level, the Mechira will, the bittul will take care of everything. And of course, you do know, that there were those who denied it. And they say the bittul and the mechira are contradictory, not complementary. The machlokas is like the dole aposkin. And many of these individuals therefore insist that you only sell chametz to rabbanim. You don't sell chametz ben. Right? You've heard of that shita. You won't sell bread. You won't sell noodles. Some people won't even sell schnapps, which is effectively really the same chomeris for the most part. They'll sell candies and have a little bit of chametz mixed in. But why? Why? Because this is the reason. Because they hold that the Mechira's Chametz only works as a haroma, on the level of the Rabbanim. And they don't accept the fact that the Bittul takes care of whatever you're selling, so they're stuck. And they can only sell the Rabbanim, the rice to throw out. That's something we have our customs. It is widespread in many circles. That's the kind of a custom. Anyway, you got it straight. Let's chazer again. You have to analyze the effectiveness of Mechira's Chametz. And the biggest problem is that what does the guy have in mind? What do they have in mind? So many Gedolim say, what do you mean they have in mind? Who cares? They have in mind. Dvarim shebaleim enim dvarim. He goes through the most of the sale, he goes through every last kinyan, kinyan chater, kinyan agav, kinyan, what do you mean? What do you mean he has in mind? He saw what we did over here, we had our spirit. We went through five or six different methods of transfer. He doesn't have in mind. You're psychoanalyzing. Yeah. Rama Shibalay and Dvaram. We don't care what he has in mind. That's the position of the Samsung and other users. Not to talk about it once in their eyes. I'll just say no. It's a bit of Rama Shibalay and Dvaram. It's clear he doesn't have it in mind. It depends upon who the guy is. No doubt in my mind, at least with respect to John Brown, that you can't say for sure that he doesn't have in mind to be coach. You may think so, but once you think so, then everybody's some service idea of Rama Shibalay and Dvaram will kick in. Only if it's obvious, you get some kind of drunken guy, he doesn't know his head from his foot, and then you say, you modify the Chametz, he says, yeah. And then you might argue that it's clear that the circumstances does not want it to become it. That's a different story. That's why it's good to use someone who's a businessman, who's sophisticated, who knows what's going on, who's sober, and who's rich, who can pay the money. And that's what we try to demonstrate here. Yes.
point to that last sheet that is not the right stuff.
No.
How is that a good answer? Because building the Zalva over in the comment, then what's the difference?
We'll arrow that in a minute. Again, some say the way to around that is like giving it away as a gift of a davar muad, but das lecheres makna will overcome the chesaron in the das konan. Yet others say no, it's a chesaron across the field of shoes. That's what helps us out. It's not really is. It only looks like it is. If the Torah makes it is, it's even a weaker level of kinyan will suffice. Yet others say it's all the harama. It really does not really affect it. And it works only because the bittul works, the level of the bittul works with the right. But the rabbanon, even though it doesn't really work, we say it's different works, it's sufficient. And yet others who say the bittul and the mechira are contradictory and complementary, will limit it to the chometz rabbanon. Okay. Now, let's take a step back, if you will. You mentioned the word, the H word. Harom. I want to know, what is the status of harom? People use this word as, you know, harom, loophole. Sneaking around the law, you know, what is this harama story? Is it good? Is it bad? When is the world? What are the cases which is found in the Gemara and in the post? Oh, evidence that harama is limited to the Rabbanan will give you one Gemara. The Gemara is in the Sefer Shabbos, which speaks of even one of the number of cases. The one is the most striking case. You're not supposed to go on a ferry on Shabbos. So the Gemara is a case. If someone wants to go across the river, they can't do it. What does he do? He goes in a ferry, reaches park, the parking lot, you know, and parks in attached to the shore, the port. And then he falls asleep. Many of us have no problem falling asleep right now, right? Falls asleep, right? So he falls asleep, and guess what? He wakes up at the last stop, on the other side of the river. After Gemara suggests this mutter, because the whole prohibition is midi rabban. You see, Harama works only midi rabban. That's one proof for this statement.
This itself, that proof has a whole history about it. Is that a good proof or is it a bad proof? The Mekor Chaim was a very fundamental distinction. And the word Harama can mean two things. Harama can mean a loophole which is really, technically speaking, valid. Only one problem. You pull the shtick to circumvent a particular law. Or, harama can mean, as is the case we're discussing of the ferry, if harama really a bluff, you didn't get around the law. You just literally closed your eyes to it, fell asleep. You didn't get around the law. Since you didn't get around the law, so really, we really shouldn't be a successful harama. So the Mekor Chaim suggests, it depends which harama you're talking about. A harama really, the essence doesn't work. It's just closing your eyes and making believe. That's limited to the Rabbanah. That's what the Gemara and Shabbos of Kuflam test teaches us. However, says the Mekor Chaim, Mechiras Chometz, which really does work, because the sale is a valid sale, then it should work even by Zohorisis. Even if there were no bittul, if the bittul wouldn't affect that which is being sold, it would be successful and effective nonetheless, because they're two separate kinds of harama. Harama which does the job, which doesn't do the job. Closing eyes in the ferry doesn't really do the job. And still it works by the Rabban. Whereas Mechiras Chometz, which is the Mekor Chaim assumes does work, should work by the Raisins, of course. Of course, the idea of the Mekor Hashoah, the other didn't work. That's the amazing thing. The Mekor Hashoah held that Mechiras Chometz doesn't really work. It's like closing your eyes in the ferry. As the Franz Avagolius, his descendant, pointed out. The other really didn't work. So if it doesn't work, then the comparison to the Gemara and Shabbos Kuflam is a perfect comparison. The Mekor Chaim assumes that really does work. And then the comparison, just as you're pulling the shtick, getting around by Yerua, then it's not comparable precisely to the Sugin Shabbos Kuflam test. But the Rambam Golis said, no, my great-grandfather meant that it doesn't work at all. That's a perfect comparison to the guy closing his eyes in the ferry. Okay? So it's a question of what the Harama means by Rambam Mechiras Chometz. If it means one thing, then it should work by the Raisis. And if it means another thing, it should only work by the Rabbanan. That's exactly the dispute between the posts. That's one case in point of harama by the rabbonos. There are two kinds of harama, all right? Two kinds of harama. So let's review. A harama which, quote, works, we say works. That you really did something to get around the law, such as Mechiras Chometz, so then the consensus view is that it does work by the rice. The harama that doesn't work is the harama in Haram, which works only limited to the Rabbanim, Haram doesn't really do the job. Nothing really happened. Oh. Now, let's analyze this whole issue in terms of Harama working by the Raisis, the Harama which does work. We assume it works by the Raisis. We have no disproof. There's no disproof, right? Because the case of the Gemara and Shabbos is with Harama, which I say isn't really effective. Just closing your eyes to it. It's fooling, right? A very, very weak Harama, we might call it. That's limited to the Rabbanim, correct. What about a strong Harama which really works? Let's assume the Chira has come at the cause of the day which holds that it really is effective. Not like the Shulman Kodesh. Not like the Bukhar Shah, the Tuah Shah. Then the Pashas should work. Well, there's a Gemara in Gittin about it. And everyone yells and pummels about this Gemara in Gittin. It's really a Mishnah Matzah Sheni, really. But the Gemara speaks about, the Mishnah speaks about the following case. You know that if you uphold your own Matzah Sheni, you're required to add the 25% surcharge. These days, surcharge. It's called Tosefes Chomesh. Right? And this surcharge only applies if you, in a case in which it's your Maaseh Sheni and your Poser, etc., etc. So there's a way around this surcharge. How do you get out of this? What do you do? How do you get around it? Yeah, you know the trick. You give it to somebody else, and you know, and he's Poser for you. You know these shtiklach, and you get it back. It works, you can do that. Yet the Yerushalmi calls the Pasuk, and the Pasuk is L'man Yivarechacha. Right? The Pasuk says in Parshas Re'e, when it comes to Maaseh Sheni, you'll be far away, that you'll be Ki Yivarechacha, that you're far away from Yerushalayim, then you have to transfer from the fruit to the money, buy it back to the fruit again, etc., etc. So you see, there's an idea of relation of Bracha. So everyone tumbles with this Yerushalmi. Some say, and this Yerushalmi is a proof that were it not for the pasuk, the special exception of the Lashon of Bracha, the whole Tziv of Bracha, the Yerushalmi says, that Harama, even a quote, effective Harama, which really does work technically because you actually transfer possession to a different party, still wouldn't work. Still wouldn't work when it comes to a Daraisa. It goes against what we spoke about earlier. Earlier we had said that Harama, which what I called an effective kind of Harama, which not just you closing your eyes, but just doing a shtick, a loophole, to get around it, we assume that kind of Harama would work by Daraisa. And yet here it appears that it would not work by Daraisa. That's a very serious problem, if that's how you interpret the Yerushalmi. Yes, David? Sure. Since it says the Torah, Yivarechacha, Lashon HaBracha, that's why case of Marimena Maaseh Sheni. Therefore, Maaseh Sheni, you can pull the shtikla and give it to somebody else, to be poder, to avoid the Indian of Cholmish. The implication is of it, that if it would not be the Lashon of Bracha, then this little twist would be inappropriate. Right? It wouldn't be permitted to do so. Because of your, that's how many learn the Yerushalmi. Because of your Erecha, you can do the Harav. So the question then becomes, that implies otherwise you cannot do a Harav by the Rav. Even Harav, which does work, which is technically speaking a loophole, which is effective. Yeah. So the post can talk about this this proof. Is it a proof? Is it not a proof? Which way is it a proof? I'd like to just share with you one beautiful svara in this regard. Perhaps the two different kinds of derises. There's an ase and a los ase. When it comes to a los ase, all we have to do, bottom line, is avoid a certain problem. That's to avoid a problem. That's our goal, to avoid a problem. How you avoid it is your business. You avoid it, you avoid it. That's the end. I don't care how you avoid it. If you avoided the history of Vayirah by selling it to a guy and then sell it back to you with a fancy shtick, so what? It's not a lot. It's all Vayirah. That's a Harama, and it's an effective kind of Harama, and we're going to assume for no one who works even by the right. Either an offer that you shall me that not, because it says by Meister, it wouldn't have worked if not for the special process. The other way down, but for the moment, let's just stick to one. Well, a distinction can be drawn between a los ase and ase. Ase, which is a positive commandment, this is something which requires us to do it and not to get around. If we get around the los ase, so when we can say we're not guilty. If you get around an ase, what have you done? You've circumvented the ase, you haven't fulfilled the ase. That's a no-no. You haven't fulfilled the essay. You've gotten around the essay. Very nice. For me, all the essay you haven't done yet. Essay is supposed to actually do, not avoid.
So therefore, it's entirely possible that the harama would work by the rice, by a harama to avoid a low satay, which is mechiras chametz. To avoid by your roi, you do a harama, you sell the chametz to a goy. Tashbita, presumably, it's kuzayis. However, when it comes to meiser, this reasoning continues. Comes to meiser, talking about an assay, a pinyon meiser, with a chomesh, and you're going to pull a dray, a stick, to get out of the chomesh of the top of the wall's opinion. You have circumvented an assay. This may not be done ordinarily, and therefore the only reason that it may be done in this case is why? What is the same pasuk? Lashon of bracha. There's lashon of bracha to teach you. Even though it's an assay, and harama by an assay, something which should not really be done ordinarily, but over here we permit it because of a special example called harama by los assay. That always works, as long as it's a harama which, quote, works, the post which, quote, doesn't work, as we said before. Nafkamina, Shemitah. How the land will go before Shemitah. The suggestion was made, as far as the los assay is concerned, Shemitah, good. Okay. How the assay? Shemitah the mitzvah assay. Right? Shav sar shavu hashem. For that purpose, you haven't really fulfilled it. You've gotten around it. You're getting around it into the raisa, perhaps, or maybe even into the rabbanon. But to get around something by not fulfilling it is not a proper thing to do. This is what some poskim suggest. So the yonah diyama could have the shemitah aspect aside from the fact that we're learning the sef of sar. Okay. That. Shemitah, they sell land to an Arab. Now, if it's all a question of avoiding a low satay, according to the logic that we're suggesting at the present time, as long as you only avoid a low satay, harama is not a problem. Right? Because after all, it's, you have done a low satay. It's not a problem. It works all over the place, universally. And only when it comes to avoiding an assay, that's when the Rishami has to intercede and mention this very successive of Lashon Bracha. Because otherwise you cannot use an harama to circumvent a mitzvah assay. Maybe even the rabbanon, maybe even the city rabbanon might be a problem.
So
not a good kavah chomer. Could be an assay, the rabbanon is more common than a low assay with a rice in this regard. Could be. Okay. You have a question, ask it now.
Who said it's
not the same?
Yeah.
I told you, it's printed in the Pe'er Hador. The Baggy of Condemnation, there to quote the name of Rabbi Mendelssohn, the one of the Rachel, the Rabbi from Amir, the Buddha of Moshe. I believe Rabbi Shach has a piece about this in the most recent, or HaMizrach, or whatever, I brought it in one day, and, about this very point. Okay, this is the issue of Harama. Now, Rabbi, I'd like to spend some time on the Mechira's Chumash. All right, you with me? You haven't plugged in? I have to tell you that the last Bechina was not as good as the first. I think the main reason was people were a little tuned out. People didn't come to Chazar, they said the tape recorder. And the guys at the tape recorder said they heard it, they were out of it already. You have to be careful. You have to at least listen to it the first time when you at least have a shaykh to it. When a Chazar again 2 weeks later, a month later, that's okay. You have to encourage you at least to hear it now. Then they can Chazar at their own leisure. But it makes a difference. I know that it's a distinction, it was a correlation between the tape recorder and the grave. I mean, those word here for the Chazar, they sent tape recorders. It was very awesome to get into it. That's why I detected it, at least in engraved in the papers from last time. Okay, we'll try to be clear. Now both sides. What happened? I saw some of the details of Mechira Shamas. I'd like to first begin by discussing the Shtar Mechira Shamas. Let's explain what the shtar is and what the shtar isn't. We learn the Gemara, the Tosefta has, it's brought by the Rosh, an institution called Mechiras Chametz. The person is going and he meets a guy on the ship, and it's over Erev Pesach. He sells the chametz to the guy, he's not buying back enough to Pesach. All is brought by the Tosefta and the Rosh. Now, a document at first glance doesn't help to sell chametz, because chametz is metalkalin, and metalkalin is mixed there with other things, not with shtar. Wouldn't work. Yes, it does work. As dina de malchusa dina, or as minig asofer, it works in a different, with different capacity. But by and large, the reason for the document is not so much the actual chametz, but the document is there to effect the
Pirus Karka, the rental of land. It's quoted in Poskim that to rent land, write a document. Now, what we discuss today, right now, is how critical is the document and how critical are some of the details of the workings of this document. Well, let's first see. First, how critical is the document to Chlap? So there are some Poskim who try to defend the Mechira Summit even when the Shtar was patently invalid. For example, the rabbi forgot to sign it. He forgot to give it to the non-Jew. Something else went wrong. Whatever was, something went wrong with the document. What's it in that case? So first, that should be no good. This is self-copy. You need a document. Well, we, generally speaking, as we'll mention again in the future, don't sell karka to the garden. What do we do rather? We what? We rent it to a garden. We rent it to a garden. If it doesn't belong to you, the karka, you're a renter, obviously, because you're just subletting it. But if it belongs to you, what's that considered? As a sale or rental, we generally speaking view it as a renter, which makes more sense. You know, sale looks like more of a fraud or of a harum, as we said before. We try to make it as close to the reality as possible. Good. Now, it says in Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpat, that even though to sell property you require a shtar, Bakosh Krosma says shtar, you require a document. If you're just trying to rent property, not to sell it, then perhaps you would not require documentation, would not require a shtar. Therefore, there's one point is to say, if the shtar was completely invalid, still, the rental will go through, it's only a rental. And look, the chometz doesn't rely on the shtar anyway. So look, we do the best we can, we write a shtar. If the shtar for some reason should backfire and become puzzled, we wouldn't answer the chometz anyway. I think that's the correct shtar. Post facto, after Pesach is over, the rabbi hates to be picky, but you have to notice that you didn't have to sign this piece of paper. That would be, you know, bad news, right? After PK, as bad as the news is, we wouldn't have to make an announcement to show all those who sold chometz to Rabbi X have to throw their chometz into the garbage. That'd be the end of Rabbi X probably in that shul. But even without that, even if not Rabbi X, even if it has a life contract, doesn't make much difference, we all know. But even if, let's say, it's a shtibble, he runs the whole show, whatever it may be, still it's not because of the Hepson moment. I'm required to go that far. Look, even though the star is puzzled, but it's only for Schirah's purpose. We rent the land, we don't sell it. And for renting of the land, you don't need a shtar at all. So the shtar is puzzles, a big deal. That's what most poskim say. But let's, you know, analyze a little bit further. What happens if the document really is a requirement? What do you actually need in terms of Hilchos Shtar? So, sorry? Yeah, sorry, though. That's a bit of a problem. Some suggest that nowadays people who rent, they always use the document. But I counter it by saying that people who often will rent the house for 10 days in Israel, you know, people in Israel very often want to make some money. They hear some rich American tourists coming for Pesach or Sukkot. They need a place to stay. They'll move out. I'm not kidding. They'll move out of their own apartment for 2 weeks. You ever heard of these cases?
Yeah.
Sure, all the time. And they'll stay by their in-laws, they'll cram in, they'll do anything. Well, they make $1,000 from the American rich tourist. Josh, if you want to stay in my house alone when I'm not there, I'll be happy to try. It's your face that gives it away. who would trust you? I think even in America, people who, you're right, you know, there's a different reason, not because they trust less. They need the money less. That's the shot. Who go, really? You don't think so? You have to go away. We're going to go away. If I went away, beyond this, someone said, for nothing, not for money. For the summer, that's true. People rent out for the summer. They don't always have a contract. They always have a shtar and a summer rental? I'm not talking about buffalo. I'm talking about...
No, 100%. Everything is suggested.
I'm telling you no, because I sat in a dintara. I'm telling you no for a fact. I sat in a dintara
which was involved a bunch of yeshiva guys and apartments right around there. You know, there was one guy moved in, one guy moved out, and again, it was put in, and got engaged, and they got this, and that whole story back and forth. There's nothing written.
They trusted each other.
That's the last time any of them did it, right?
Yeah. No, well, I guess maybe yeshiva. I don't know. I don't want to say for sure. So maybe you're right. But we do try to get back to this star kosher. But for the Yemen, maybe we would say, look, that the star is meeker and didn't for schiris wouldn't be required. And the minhag ha-sochah was not exactly clear what it is. So, no. And of course, the chaschil was having a kosher with star. Do we require on both sides the signature of the sellers on the document? Here is a very serious dispute. Do you require the signature of the sellers on the document itself? Some authorities say definitely yes. Of course you need the sellers to sign the document. What kind of document is this if it's not being signed by the sellers? Meaningless. Absolutely meaningless. It means nothing if they don't sign it. Nothing. Meaningless. And not only that, but there are some authorities who maintain that the sellers have to sign the actual piece of paper which is used for to effectuate the sale. Not a separate piece of paper. If they have people sell to sign a power of attorney form, we call it Shtar HaShoh. But it's a separate Shtar Mechira, a separate document of sale that some posts suggest there's no tziruf, there's no linkage between these two documents. Some staple it together, you know. I never liked that too much. What's a staple? You staple in, staple out. What if that doesn't prove anything? You staple anything you want together. I don't ever like to do that. So what's that? So there are about three or four opinions in this child. One is, don't have to sign. If the rabbi signs for all of them. If the rabbi is their agent. That's a difficult opinion. Not everyone agrees to that. Some say that even though they're signing on two separate forms, since the forms sort of refer to each other a little bit, right? I wanted to sell the comment any way he pleases, and the Shtar Mechir refers to the separate Harshos, but there is some kind of a combination between the two of them, even though it's not stapled together. And some actually will be called staple it together. Right? It's got different customs. What I do is, as I told you, I started doing, when I became very aware of this question, is as follows. I have a separate piece of paper which I brought into you, which has a Shtar Mechira in very, very brief form, three lines. We, the undersigned, hereby sell our chametz to John Brown, and rent our areas of the chametz is found to Mr. John Brown, and more details can be found on separate power of attorney forms, which is the Shtar HaShoah, and a longer document of sale, which is the Shtar Mechira. So this is this combines the essence of both. This gives you the name, address, and value of every person on the summit, and it has the sale, and it's realized on top, and everyone signs. So this way you have the combination. This one piece of paper itself has both, a Hashah and a Mechira, which is, that overcomes this problem completely. It's true. Not everyone signed it, some people will offer you on the telephone. You know, they can't come. But as a matter of fact, we're talking about chumras. As a chumra of the week, one of the posuk suggests, based on the posuk in Navi, Shtar, which is the Gemara interprets to mean